Avodah Zarah, Perek Beis, Mishnah Dalet, 2-4. This Mishnah has a few machloksim between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham regarding whether something is Asr Bahana, economic benefit, or just Asr Bechila, you just can't eat it, but you could sell it to somebody else. And let's go from one at a time, there are three in total. The first is Nodos Ha'ovde Kochavim V'kan Kanehan. Node is, the correct translation would be really a wine skin, meaning it's a piece of leather from a sheep or goat that's sort of turned inside out and used to store wine. And a kankan is a jar made out of clay, cheres. So these two containers are used to hold wine. And if a over kochavim, a Gentile is using this, so now the wine inside, of course, is yai nesech, even stam yinam, and therefore it's asr bahana. And if you emptied that container out, so it's cleaned out, and then v'yayin shel Yisrael kanus behen, and then you put kosher Jewish wine inside the wineskin, or inside the kankan, the jar. So the question is, now what happens? Do we have to be afraid that there's ta'am, taste, leaching into the kosher wine from the walls of the container? So yes, we do. And the Mishnah therefore says, asurin, the wine, the Jewish wine, the kosher wine is not kosher anymore, it's now forbidden. The asurin isur hana, you can't even get benefit from it, economic benefit, div Reb Meir. Reb Meir Shita. So Reb Meir is the strict one here, and he is throughout, he holds asur bahana, and the chacham hold no, chacham omrim ein isurin isur hana, it's not a forbidden to get benefit from, economically you could sell it, but you can't, it's asur bachila. Now, the point of the machlokas here is, since there's no actual wine from Yai Nesach present, it's just blios, absorptions in the container. So Reb Meir says, so what? The rule is, we'll see later on the Masechta, that Yai Nesech mixed with kosher wine in any amount, the whole mixture is forbidden, Asr Bahana. There's no bittul there. That's what's happening over here, says Reb Meir, so the whole thing's forbidden. Chacham disagree, they say, no. Well, it's true, of course, they hold that even the tiniest drop of Yai Nesech into a huge amount of kosher wine makes the whole mixture forbidden, but here there's not even one drop of yayin nesech. There's just taste, ta'am, that's absorbed in the walls, not yayin be'en, not actual drops of forbidden wine. And therefore, in such a scenario, they were more lenient and said, no, it's not asr bahana, it's only asr bachila, you just can't drink it. Now, just to make something clear here, if under normal circumstances we don't have absorption of taste unless there's heat involved, and there's no heat involved in storing of wine. But there's a separate rule, which is, if something is held in a container for a long time, and then it's assumed that the container absorbed some of the taste, say 24 hours period or more, then it absorbs into the walls of the container. So that's what's happening over here. Since the Gentile would store his wine for an extended period of time, we assume that there is some absorption of taste, and when the Jew uses it afterwards, even if he rinses it out, doesn't matter, some of the taste will leach back in to the kosher wine, making it all forbidden. The halacha will be like the chacham here, as will be all the cases, meaning it's asr b'achila, but not asr b'hana. If you actually had the scenario and you wanted to, you know, kosherize your container in such a scenario, which never used with hot, you just want to, you know, you're afraid of the absorbent taste anyways. So the method would be milui v'iru. You'd fill it up with water, let the water sit there for 24 hours, then pour the water out of the container, and then do that two more times, so a total of three times, each time letting the water sit for 24 hours, and that would be assumed to have leached out all of the taste that's in the bed and in the walls, and then after that you could use the container for cold, for drinking, that would be permitted. And that brings us to the second case of the Mishnah, which is hachartzanim v'hazagin shel ovdei kochavim. After a non-Jew presses his grapes, so yes, the wine is forbidden, but you also have leftover chartzanim v'zagin. We'll translate that as the chartzanim are the seeds, and the zagin are the skins of the grapes. Maybe the translation should be switched, depending. And the question is, are the skins and seeds having the same halachic status as the wine or not? So everyone agrees that, of course, they're wet and they're forbidden because it's wine. What happens if they dry out entirely? Like after 12 months and they're bone dry, are they still forbidden? So again, Reb Meir is machmer. It says here, asurin v'isurin isur hanadiv Reb Meir. Reb Meir holds no. The grape skins and seeds are the same status as the grape juice, and if it's done by a Gentile, it's forever forbidden. V'cham omrim lachin asurin yaveshin mutarin. The Cham say no, skins and seeds of grapes are not included in this restriction whatsoever. So while they're moist, and that moisture is wine, which is forbidden. So of course they're forbidden. But once they totally dry out after 12 months, you actually could eat the skins and seeds in theory. They're mutter even for achila if you wanted to eat them. Halacha again like the chachamim. The third case of our Mishnah is hamurius ugvinos beis unyaki shel ovdei kochavim. So these are really kind of two separate things. I'll tease them apart. Murias is like a condiment that they used in Roman times. It's basically the leftovers from fish production, the oil and innards of the fish mixed with salt and left to dry. And they sometimes added not just water, but also wine to the mixture. So the question is, once you have Gentiles making murias, is it forbidden because of the wine being added to it? This was a common thing, you should just know, by the way. Muria in English, or whatever in Latin, is the low-quality version, and kind of especially disgusting. But the high-quality stuff, garum, was actually like prized and really expensive, and sort of like a seasoned fish innard condiment, which was highly prized in Roman times. In any case, the reason why you're adding to the murias, the wine, is because murias is kind of rotting fish innards, and it's gross and stinky, and the wine takes away some of that nastiness. So the point is, you're not adding wine to flavor it. You don't want the flavor of the wine per se, you just want the wine there to remove the nasty. And so the question is, in that case, are we going to consider this wine to being no sin tam to forbid it? So again, you have Reb Meir holds it's asurin v'isurin isurhana, because he holds that wine is there and it's forbidden. And the Chacham said, no, we're not so strict. The Isra will be an Isra of Achila, because there's wine present, but not Asir Hana, because it's not really, it's in the mix, it's really not there. Okay, it's a butzel in the mixture, and the taste is not significant. Now, the other half of this third case was something else, which was the cheese that they got from this place called Beis Unyaki. Now, the idea is that Beis Unyaki was a Gentile town where the majority of the calves ended up being served as idols to their gods. How do you make cheese? So what you do is you take a ruminant, a dead animal. It could be a cow or goat or sheep. And there's like four sections to their stomachs. The last of the four, abomasum, the Hebrews called a keva. And they would extract basically curdled milk, which is congealed inside the keva, because that's where there's the enzyme called renin, which makes which curdles the milk and makes it, you know, turn into cheese. So they would extract basically the grossness on the side of the walls of the stomach there, and that's really not considered part of the animal. It's just kind of waste, and that extracted congealed milk, if you will, and stuff is called rennet in English. It's also called keva, the same word again as the stomach itself, the keva that they extracted from the animal, and they use that to add to milk, to turn the milk into cheese. Now, as far as regular kashrus goes, we're not concerned about the rennet being sourced even from non-kosher animals, because it's like waste. It's not considered part of the animal at all. But if the animal had been offered as an idol, offered to an idol as a like a sacrificial offering, the entire, everything that was offered, including the rennet inside of it, becomes asur bahana. And therefore the question is, do we have to be afraid that this, the rennet that was used to make this cheese, came from an animal which was an idolatrous offering, which would make it forbidden in any amount? So Rabbi Meir holds, yes, we're strict. Rabbi Meir is choshesh for the miut always, and although the minority of the animals from which rennet is sourced actually are served as idols, there is the majority of calves which are offered, so he's afraid. He's concerned for that. The Chum say no, even though, yes, calves are offered, most calves are offered as offerings to the idols over there in Beis Unyaki, but there's only a minority of the rennet supply coming from such sacrificial offerings, and therefore they're lenient regarding cheese that was manufactured in Beis Unyaki. They're not afraid of the rennet. That said, the Chacham would agree that you still can't eat the cheese because the cheese, there's an Isra de Rabbanan of Gvinas Akum. You can't have Gentile-made cheese because we're afraid that, you know, we're afraid that they could have used actual meat that came from the stomach as well to curdle this milk into cheese. But the point is, therefore, the machlokas is Reb Meir holds it's asr b'hana, because he's concerned that maybe it came from a sacrificial animal from which the rennet was extracted to make the cheese, and the chacham say it's just asr b'achila because of the more generic derabanan of gvinas akum, but it's not asr b'hana, you could sell it on. And again, inside the word say as follows, I'll read it to you now. Hamurias ugvinos beis unyaki, the Morias from before, now the cheese that comes from Beis Unyaki, shall owe the kochavim, if a Gentile manufactured, asurin v'isuran isur hana, therefore Rav Meir holds, they're forbidden even to get economic benefit from, because again, we're afraid it came from a sacrificial offering in the context of the cheese. And Chacham Omrim ein isurin isur hana, they say, no, it's not forbidden to get hana, just isur achila, because of Gvinas Akum. So again, you could sell it to a Gentile and to keep the money. Halacha, in all these cases, like I said before, go like the Chachamim, not like Rabbi Meir.